The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am going back to Alsace, and a shout out to everyone who did the Wines of Alsace event from months ago. Got to try so many different expressions of Riesling and Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris and of course, Gewürztraminer. And I'm joined now by one of the co-owners of Domaine Emile Bayer. It is Valerie Bayer. Valerie, thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Thank you, Matthew, for inviting me. I'm really happy to be with you for some moments.
Hey, listen, I appreciate it. I was wondering if you could just start by talking a little bit about the domain and the long and the rich history that you have.
Yes, of course. So our domain is a family estate that is located in Eggisheim. Eggisheim is located in Alsace, so northeast part of France. There is a border with the Rhine River with Germany. So we have a very long history with winemaking in this area since the Roman brought the vineyards or the vines in this area in the late 3rd century. Eggisheim is well known as well to be the cradle of the Alsatian vineyard, and we have therefore a sister brotherhood with Auvillaine Champagne, as they are the really the cradle of Champagne vineyard. And so Alsace is a very special region for winemaking, as it has a very specific microclimate. I think we'll speak about a bit later on, and a very specific kind of soil, as it's the most diverse area for terroir in the world on such a tiny surface. It makes it very special. And our estate, Emile Bayer. Emile is the name of the grandfather of my husband, Christian. We are working together now since a few years now. Christian joined the company, the family estate, since more than 20 years now. And he's the winemaker and wine grower. And I help him to for the everyday and in the wine.
What were those early days like when you and your husband took over?
It's a long family estate history, but when we took over, Christian is the late of four kids in the family. He's the youngest one, and he was the only one to be willing to take over. And it was at a time where the parents, they had a large private customer, more private customers. And so when he took over, I was working on the industry somewhere else, but we were really willing to explore the world and to say, how is it going? How is perceived the wine anywhere else in the world? And especially as French, we know that there is a big culture and interest on winemaking, but how is it going elsewhere? And so we began to have some we meet some people, and so we decided to go on the market to meet them there and to try to understand how it was working and what how were the other winemakers succeeding on this market. So from 2009 we were exporting 5% of our production, and today we are about half of our production.
So, oh, wow. That's great. That must have been exciting back in 2009 when taken over. And we will get to more about just what makes Alsace such a great area for making wine. But I'm curious more about you. I was doing some reading, and have you finished your oenology degree? I was wondering just where you are in terms of your wine studies. I was reading, Valerie, that you were taking the degree in Beaune.
In fact, it's something very, when you come in the wine industry, it's a world. It's not something I consider as my job. It's my entire life. It's my private life. It's my professional life since I joined the estate. And at the beginning, I was just wondering how I can exchange with Christian and try to continue to help him so that we can understand the changes, climate changes. We were facing some news as well with the biodynamic certification. So there are lots of questions that are coming when you enter the world of wine. And so I feel the need. I have to really to work on academic basis, on my academic basis. So for the moment, I'm not a great help for Christian, but because I ask a lot of questions, but it's very passionate to do this. And moreover, because I meet a lot of people that are really convinced and really willing to experience some changes in the wine, going in some other estates. So it's something very, very tough because it's not my first training, but I really enjoy doing this. So it's in 2 years. First of all, I had to be accepted on that kind of training. It was in Dijon. I applied. There are 5 centers in France. I only applied in Dijon because the grandfather of Christian, Emile, he already was an oenologue in Dijon. His son, Emile, there was a lot of Emile and Leon in the family. So Emile, the grandfather, as well as Emile, his first son, were both at Dijon to do their studies. And so it was for me like a kind of being part of the family on a professional side, not only on a personal side.
Right.
And I had the chance that Christian supports me by doing this. It's not quite a very quiet moment for us. There are a lot to do because my exam are in June and I'm finishing the first year. And so one more year and hope to be graduated in 2024.
Wow, you are busy. I mean, going for your degree and then making the wine and just, you know, how you guys make your wine is so meticulous. It's impressive. And I imagine the early stages, it might have been intimidating because there's so much to learn and you're getting in the family business. And, you know, just when you think of Alsace, wine is one of the things you think of. So that is a lot for you, Valerie.
It's a lot, but I wouldn't do it slowly.
So I see this quote you talk about. We are responsible for passing this along to future generations as our ancestors did for us. And this gets into, you sort of mentioned it about the biodynamic farming. I was wondering I'd love to hear about the transition that has happened at your domain from the early 2000s until the full biodynamic certification in 2019.
It's a big change, but really when Christian took over more than 20 years ago, early in the 2000s, it was for him very natural to be organic at least. So without being certified, he already did this in the vineyards, as we are very lucky in Alsace and specifically in Eggisheim to have a very dry microclimate. So Alsace is considered to be a continental dry climate, and Colmar is known to be the second driest place in France. And that's one of the reasons why organic and biodynamic is so spread in Alsace, because we have maybe easiest weather conditions to do this. Another factor could be our maybe two kind of culture between German and Latin, but it's another subject. But really, so it was for him very like natural to be organic and to try to do the best for the environment, for the vineyards, because the grapes is 80% or even 100% of the quality of the final wine. So you really have to be to take care of the vines. And it's a really long-term job, as planting a vineyard is lasting for maybe 40, 50, the longer possible. And the most exciting plots we are vinifying today were planted by the father of Christian. So we are really happy that he did the job, and we try, it's our really our responsibility to do the same for maybe the next generation. I don't know if it will be our kids or someone else, but it's really something that we have in our minds to let the earth at least on the same level of sustainability as we get it or better. This is something is very important. And you know, when you are working in your office, you sometimes you have pictures of your family or of something that makes you happy and makes you having a positive state of mind. And working the vineyard is the same. When you see a land that is completely brown and without grass and without trees, are you really happy to work outside? I don't know.
No.
We feel it better by having dry stone walls, trees, lavender, rosemary, vineyard vines. So it makes our state of mind better by working in this kind of environment.
That's true. That's a good point. And also, I completely forgot about the fact how dry Alsace is, which makes it more conducive to do biodynamic. I completely forgot about that. One thing I found of interest is that the impact that the biodynamic process of growing the grapes, that it's increased resilience with climate change, and it means the roots are going deeper. I was wondering if you could talk about just what it means for the actual vines themselves by switching to biodynamic.
Organic was a first step and we were happy to take it, but biodynamic is something really like a lot of tools that you have up to you to use them or not, or to use more this kind or this other. It's the more you go, the deeper you go in the subject, the more questions you have, and it's non-ending. So of course you can imagine when you plant a vine, when it's very young, the vines need a lot of energy to grow their roots. So if at the same moment you ask them to grow a lot of grapes, you can imagine that the plant won't have the energy to grow the roots and to ripen the grapes. So during the first years, you just have to ask the lowest as possible to the vine to let it grow slowly its root system, and so that going deeper is the ability to find more nutrients. Moreover, there is the mycorrhization as well, that is very important. So some more roots that are added to the primary and secondary roots, and that are able to go in some places where the roots are not able to go. So it really gives a large rooting system that makes the nutrients easily and in better quantities available for the plant. So as it is, it has a good nutrients, and it took its time to be really well adapted in the soil. It can then focus on growing the upper, the leaves, and in a better balance. It's not in a hurry, like a machine. You ask him to work 24 hours a day. A machine will last fewer time if it works 24 hours in a day or 14 hours in a day. For the plant, it's the same. If you ask him too much, so the plant is not able to do all very quickly, a lot of grapes, good quality. You have to be patient. You have to look at your environment to see what is the specificity. Is there any forest? Is there a lot of wind? Is there some river? So you have to be very aware of your environment and adapt to each plot. One specificity of Alsace as well is the very spread. It's as spread as Burgundy, for example. There are a lot of microclimates in this region, and plots and lieux-dits that are known since the Middle Age and that were given some names according to their specificity. For example, we have in the Grand Cru area, we have a plot called Sundel. And Sundel, the German old root, means little sun. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a plot that is at the steepest part of Egisheim, but the sunniest part as well. So when it's snowing, the snow is melting first in this place, much before the snow in other places. So there is a real sense, a reality behind all the names of this Liudi. So if you take the attention of all this subject, the name, the location, the soil, the kind of woodstock, the variety, are you planting massal or clonal? Clonal is a selection that is maybe more vigorous, more able to fight against some disease. But massal will give you something not so big grapes, but maybe smaller grapes, but with more aromas. So making a wine is 100 details, and you have to combine everything to make your own way.
And we'll talk about your own profile of wines, but getting back to you for a second, Valerie, when did you start to fall in love with wine? Was it before you were married? Was it when you were younger? I'm always curious about someone's wine journey. What was it? Was there a moment? Was there a bottle? What was it for you?
It's a bit everything of this, but really the in my family, you know, there was not a tradition of winemaking, even if in all families, my grandfather was born in 1898. So I remember as a child, my grandfather drinking a glass of wine that he did in his own plots as a farmer, because he was owning land and some plots for growing grapes, even if it was not on a professional way. But it was the fact in nearly all the families at this time. So in every family, nearly there was like a farmer. You did your own grapes or vegetables in your garden. And so as long as I remember my grandfather drinking his wine. And so when I met Christian, I understood maybe what kind of interest wine can be and how deep was this culture of wine. And so it was really my first meeting with the wine world was with my husband, with Christian. And then it came slowly, but I always had an eye on what he was doing, how he was doing. And all the first times that we traveled to a market, even when I was not working with him, I always took some holidays to go with him on the market. So it was important for us to have four eyes seeing what is this new culture? Is there a partner that we feel good to build something on the long time partnership? So it's really a way that we build together slowly. And when my kids were born in 2014, then I say, okay, now it's the moment. If I want to join, it's now, or I can do something else as well. And maybe when you are 20, you want to prove a lot to yourself and say, okay, I don't want to go in a family estate. I want to prove that I can do my own professional way and build something. But when you are 40 with your kids, we are not so young parents. But when you're 40 with your kids, your world is changing. You just say, okay, what is very important to me? And what do I want? How do I want to organize to make it possible? So it was obvious for me to join. Christian was willing to have me on his side since more than 15 years. But when we didn't have the kids, I wanted to do my own way. And since then, it was really, I opened the door of the wine world, and I'm not sure it will end once, because there are too many things to discover, to know, to people to meet. And that's really something passioning.
That is really impressive. And what a great mindset you have on this. I get the idea of, oh no, I'm going to do something completely independent, but you're helping to make really good wine and you're raising kids. That sounds like a pretty full day, a full month, a full year. And also, I mean, how cool is it for you because you're learning, I mean, over the last decade or two decades, how much you've learned, not just about making wine, but science and climate and Mother Nature and marketing and economics and consumer trends. I mean, every day, you said earlier in this interview, you're always asking questions. I mean, every day you must be learning new things.
I think it's important, but one thing you learn is that you won't make a revolution. For me and for Christian as well, it's very important to respect what our ancestor did.
Yeah.
And I fully now feel I'm from the family since I really began this study in wine. So it's really something we respect, because all these people did a lot of effort and a lot of passion in the in their choices. And so today we are really responsible of it and try to pass it over. I don't feel like a proprietor, like it's my property. I don't feel that. And we are really here for a few decades and try to do our best and try to reveal the best of our kids, try to reveal the best of our vineyards. Mm-hmm. And really, maybe all these meetings and all the people we meet, all the wine we drink, is really having a better understanding and really feel not only one way. I mean, you find your own way. What is good for someone is maybe not good for you. And so it's important to be conscious of what you need.
Yeah.
And I know my need is to learn a lot and to meet the people and to try the wines. And and the more wines I drink, the more you see that they're wine for different moments. A cheap wine can be excellent when it's shared with good friends. And so we always drink wine blind, not to be focused on the label or on the name. Yeah, it's always something we try to be open-minded and not to have any preconceived approach, as life is so diverse. And
let's talk, you mentioned about trying wines. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners just about your profile of wines that we tried a bunch a while ago, Riesling, a Pinot Noir, I believe a Pinot Gris as well. I was wondering if you could tell just a little bit about the wines that you guys make.
So at the estate, when Christian took over 20 years ago, there was a huge part of Gewürztraminer. So as you may know, Alsace is really focused on grapes and lieu-dit as well, on terroir plots. But usually in Alsace, you will find wines that are grape oriented, and Gewürztraminer had a huge proportion planted in the vineyard, as well as the Pinot family, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, because the region is producing a lot of sparkling wine as well, and the Pinot Blanc, for example, is one of the most important part of the Cremant. So at the estate today, since the climate changed, our plantations changed as well. That means that for example, for the Pinot family, we have the Pinot Blanc, Pinot Auxerrois. Pinot Auxerrois is very proximate with Viognier, for example, with a lot of aromatic but a very low acidity, mm-hmm. whereas Pinot Blanc has a lower aromatic and a higher acidity. And since the climate change, for example, our first Pinot Blanc, we like it. We like to have it fresh and crispy and easy to open. And so we changed the proportion since we notice the climate change. So today there is a higher proportion of Pinot Blanc with more acidity to have it still crispy and fresh, whereas in the past there was mainly Pinot Auxerrois, for example. So there are some grapes that are changing in the vineyard, but mainly in our estate, we have Riesling and Pinot Noir planted. Pinot Noir is really today a big trend in Alsace and at the estate as well. It's the only Alsacian red grape that is possible in the appellation, even if this grape is is present in Alsace since more than 300 years ago. So it's not something new in the region, but what's new is that the wine grower, winemaker are really, really, how to say, precise with this grape more than 30 years ago, maybe, where you could find some lighter kind of Pinot Noir. Today, there is a really boom in the region with the wine growers to show that the region is able to produce great Pinot Noirs. And we had a very good news in the appellation since last year, where two Grand Cru, above the 51 Grand Cru that exist in Alsace, two Grand Cru are allowed to be named Grand Cru for the Pinot Noir grapes. And it was not the case in the past. It was only Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, and Muscat, the four noble grapes.
That must be big for you guys. And by the way, I love your Rieslings. We can just spend the rest of the interview talking about your Rieslings. But Pinot Noir, I imagine, internationally is easier to sell than Riesling. And if these vineyards now get a Grand Cru status to make the Pinot Noir, that should mean for very interesting times for you guys going forward as Alsace tries to become, you know, more famous for their Pinot.
It's maybe the people knows more what to expect with a Pinot Noir. It's dry, it's red, there is a bit of tannin, there are a bit of structure. It's a light red wine. I mean, lighter as a Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot, but not light in the sense of small wine. It's can be very complex, and it's a very passioning grape, because you have the impact of the grapes, the impact of the vinification, the impact of the aging as well. If you use oak or not, if you filter, there are a lot of possibilities, and I think that the winemakers are really making fun by exploring all these ways, and that they are doing it even more professionally by making some trainees outside of Alsace, in Burgundy, but in other kind of regions as well. So Pinot Noir is really to discover in Alsace today. Of course, Riesling is the king.
Yes. Let's end there. Let's hear what. And sorry to interrupt. And I mean, it is exciting to see where Pinot Noir is going to be 20 years from now in Alsace. But talk about the Riesling. Brag about the Riesling. Alsatian Riesling, it's one of the best white wines on the planet.
I remember once John C. Robinson, who is really the Pope of journalism for wine, told that Riesling is maybe the most able white grape to age because it has a high acidity, very nice aromatic. So Riesling is really the king. But in Alsace, we have a big neighbor that is doing Riesling as well, and so sometimes Germany, and so sometimes people don't know always what to expect with Riesling. Is it going to be dry? Is it going to be a bit sweet, a lot of sweetness? So things are changing today. So you usually the Riesling that you find are dry and are really able to be paired with some cooking, some very great Cibas, some Cibas with a bit of ginger or citrus. So it's really something that is great. And Riesling in Alsace is very specific too, because when you look at a map where Riesling is growing, usually Alsace is the southernmost place where Riesling is grown. So compared to German Mosel, for example, the personality are diverse. German Mosel, you will find more green citrus, very delicate aromas as well. In Alsace, it's maybe more yellow citrus. It's a bit maybe riper, very dry too, but another style. So it's really, it's not every kind of Riesling are very good, depending on what you are expecting and looking for. And so Riesling is very good. It's like a sponge for expressing the terroir. So it makes it very, very interesting to have it on different kind of soils. If you have it on limestone, on sandstone, on limestone, sandstone, on slate as well. So there are a lot of possibilities to express the Riesling differently.
I love it. I love the first part of that answer because, yes, Jancis Robertson is the Pope of wine journalism, and Riesling is the sponge of all the grapes to expressing terroir. Valerie, I really appreciate, as I said a little while ago, I was able to be exposed to a bunch of the wines from Domaine Emile Bayer, and I thought they were fantastic, and I just wanted to reach out and talk and just get to know you and the Domaine and your story. And I hope more people try the wines of Alsace and especially your Rieslings. They're really good stuff.
Thanks for your time and taking the time to speak about Alsace wines, because we are a very small region as regard hectares, number of hectares, but it's really you have such a diverse kind of wines that are expressing in this region that really you, if possible, you have to come here and really to see the landscape, to see where the vines are growing, to understand how the vines can be different. And really Alsace is a wonderful regions to express such a diversity. And I hope to see you once in Eggisheim.
I would love to. I was in Germany last year, and Alsace is one of those regions I still haven't been to, but it's gorgeous looking. And yes, I would absolutely love to come there and just explore and learn more about your fantastic wine region.
I would be very happy to let you discover a part of our region. And I really hope Alsace is going to grow in the wine world representation, because it's really a region where the things are changing and moving. Lots of winemakers that are on an estate size that do a lot of very great job, and it's really worth discovering more about Alsace wines.
Very well said. Valerie, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Mathieu. And once again, you are more than welcome to visit us.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.